I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, America. Welcome into The Memo.
America.
I figure we could expand our listenership base. Potentially, we could
All over?
We could potentially. It's a podcast. We could have people listening from all over the country or the world. Plus, also
our local news.
Yes, also, yeah. Well, you know, and also our witty banter. Mainly, I said that because yesterday
I was trying to hold for laughter from the where there wouldn't be any.
That's what we needed. We need a laugh track on this show.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
No, mainly I said that because
we'd argue about where it goes.
We would.
Yeah.
Leave it up to Chris. Yesterday was July 4th. That's mainly why I said that. Speaking of laugh tracks, and I hope everybody had a happy and safe 4th. My youngest is obsessed with Scooby-Doo now. You know, she likes ghosts. So she's been watching. We've got a DVD of a few episodes from the original run. And they did this with the Flintstones as well. Why would you put a laugh track on a cartoon? That's one thing I never understood about those shows.
They did a lot back then.
I guess.
For Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured it was a Hanna-Barbera thing, but I just don't know why you need that.
A lot of the laugh tracks used today are all from shows done in the 50s and 60s, like a lot of Dick Van Dyke and I Love Lucy. So when you watch sitcoms today and you hear a laugh track, all those people are dead.
The laughter of the dead.
So be thinking about that next time you're watching your Big Bang Theory, which is a laugh track, I believe.
Really?
So it was at one time. I'm curious, I think it's an audience now.
I'm not a fan of laugh tracks.
There's not a whole lot of sitcoms anymore with the
standard.
How I Met Your Mother was a laugh track. It was not filmed for a live studio audience. But I think Big Bang Theory is now. I don't watch Big Bang Theory.
I don't watch that many sitcoms.
Well, everything's single camera now. They don't have four camera shows much anymore.
It's too bad.
They don't do it.
I do watch the new Mystery Science Theater 3000, though.
Is there a new one?
Yeah, they've rebooted it. Mm-hmm. And
for Netflix.
It's really good. And, yeah. And I've gotten my wife and a couple of my kids now actually like it, which is unusual because usually they hate everything that I like to watch. We watched the one last night, Avalanche, with Rock Hudson.
Oh, God, I watched that one. That was a particularly horrible film.
Yeah, the best one of the new season so far was episode 2, Cry Wilderness. That literally had me laughing so hard I had trouble breathing.
The first one was pretty good with the lizard.
Yes, it was.
I forget the name of it, but I'm a huge MST3K fan, so yeah, I was glad they brought it back. I actually contributed to the Kickstarter. There you go.
Hey,
to bring it back. I got all the episodes early.
Nice.
Before they came out on Netflix.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that.
Throwing that money up there. Yeah. Because of me, you got to watch Mystery Science Theater 3000. I think you owe me a little something.
I brought donuts. You want some of those?
I'm trying really, really hard not to eat one of those donuts.
Dennis and I both brought donuts. So
clutch.
Double the temptation.
I'm doing my best. I've walked by it 3 times now.
I've had 2.
You've had 2?
Yeah, well. Yeah. I'd have something to wash down with the coffee.
I might half one with somebody. Anybody want a half one?
You go all donut or no donut. There's no half donut.
Half a donut.
You got to commit.
You half a donut.
Commit to the donut, Derek.
I can't.
No pain, no glory.
Come on.
Define diabetes. Where does that fall into
pain?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't need that. It's definitely the day after a holiday.
It is. I keep forgetting it's Wednesday. I keep thinking it's Monday. Which I already came to work on Monday. So this Tuesday holiday just threw me out of sorts. Completely. But I guess this way it'll seem like the weekend got here sooner. Like, we just had the weekend because I was off mostly Tuesday, and now, boom, it'll be the weekend.
Here it comes.
It's great.
You got a few days to get through there, Brad.
Yeah, a few.
Don't wish your life away.
Don't
wish your life away. Your coffee holder thing fell down.
Oh, it's falling off.
There you go.
My coffee from Crave because Cafe T12 was closed this week.
Watched you in a movie yesterday. Wasn't very funny. I like the parts that you weren't in.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, Zach Bragg is a pretty funny guy. He put that together. Go look for it on Facebook.
About your loss of Cafe 212 this week since they're closed all week.
Casey Dillard was in it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those parts were better.
She's a much better actor than me.
Yeah, those parts
and so
were
is Zach.
Better.
Well, let's be honest. Okay.
It's all right.
You had the lead, though.
I did.
Well, you had the opening scene.
I had the opening scene.
Usually those people get killed off first. It's like a Law
Actually,
and Order.
We had to cut that part.
Like a Law and Order episode. The first person you always see ends up dying.
We had to cut that
or
scene.
Or they're the people that found the body.
We should have had that. We should have had a scene where I died because I couldn't get my
they're
coffee.
They're wheeling you past 212 on a stroller
right side of that was too
bag.
Dark, though.
Yeah.
We got a packed show today, don't
do
we? We do. We got Lauren Wood. We got Dennis Sid. We got Emma Kent. We got M. Scott Morris. The Daily Journal All-Stars. I don't know. I just made that
Star
up.
Spangled July 5th episode.
Yes. The post-July 4th extravaganza.
Yeah. Well, all your big-name stars.
Yes. Lauren Wood.
Yeah. Those are my fireworks.
Chris, work that up. Get some firework effects going. I have to reintroduce everybody.
I'll see what I can
do in post-production. Maybe a little Yankee Doodle Dandy in the background.
Stars and Stripes Forever. 76 trombones.
Yeah.
My oldest daughter, by the way, I was riding with her for a few minutes yesterday. I had to run an errand with her. And she was just, this is how she is. She's hilarious. She was playing patriotic music at very high volume in her car with the windows down while we drove around. Lee Greenwood. Yes, that song.
If I went my entire life without hearing that song, you know, I've actually heard him perform that live.
God bless him.
And I wanted, and I wanted to get up and leave. It was at a Predators game, of all places. He came out and sang it, and I was like, why?
The other thing is, he's actually got like other music.
It wasn't even near July 4th.
He has other better songs.
He's just proud.
But that's the one he's known for.
Better.
Well,
it's still Lee Greenwood at the end of the day.
True.
He didn't turn into Barry Manilow. It just happened to be Lee Greenwood for that one song.
Yeah. Well, she was playing that, and then I think maybe it was Kenny Rogers singing.
Nothing wrong with Kenny Rogers.
No, certainly not. But, you know, not that I don't like patriotic music. It's not what I think of.
What was he singing?
Was it This Is Your Land? I don't know.
Is it unpatriotic to say I don't really like patriotic songs?
I'm kind of with you.
Did you realize?
I guess this is true. Francis Scott Key, when he wrote the words to the Star Spangled Banner, he actually said it to the tune of like an Irish drinking song, which I don't know how much more American you could get than that.
Right. All my dialogue that I say all day long in my head is done to the tune of an Irish drinking song. Just a little behind the scenes information for you there.
Dropkick Murphys.
Yeah. If it's a film about Boston, the Dropkick Murphys are on the soundtrack.
Yes, they are. And it's that usually that's that one song.
Okay. I don't like patriotic
music.
I mean, I'll stand up at a baseball game. You know, I'm not going to disrespect or anything.
I'm not going to listen to it when it's not July 4th. So welcome in business reporter Dennis Sid. Dennis, how you doing, man?
Great. Good morning to you. Haven't burned anything off from the 4th of July.
Well, that's good. You got all your digits?
Got all my digits. All my pounds, too, from all the barbecue and stuff that I ate. Helped, of course, by the donuts this morning.
Yeah, I should have known you'd bring some, and I brought some, too, so we got, like, double the donuts out there.
Hey, double the donuts, no problem. It's been 2 weeks, so I felt like I should compensate for that, you know?
There you go. Well, we brought you in here to talk not about donuts, but about milk.
Which goes well with
it
donuts.
It does. It does go well. And you had a big, lengthy story on, when was it, Sunday. About the decline of dairies in Mississippi. And, you know, up here, too, it used to be a huge industry, dairy farms. But not that way anymore, is it, Dennis?
No, it's been a pretty steady decline since early 2000s. Like you said, the dairy industry used to be the economy of the times up here. The Jersey cow that we got back in the 1940s, early 50s helped sort of boost the region's economy. We already had dairy farmers before that, after the boll weevil had wiped out much of the cotton crop, and the farmers were told, hey, you know, milk would be a good thing to have as a side crop. And so while we had thousands of dairy farmers, in that if you have one dairy cow, you're a dairy farmer.
Yeah.
It really got going when they brought in this Jersey cow, Jersey bull.
Which former journal publisher George McLean had a hand in, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And they brought an expert in from Mississippi State, of course, to help, I guess, spread the good seed of the Jersey bull that they brought.
Right.
To make better milk, better cows, more money. And for a while there, things were going good. And then, you know, other industry came, but, you know, back in 1990, there were 653 dairies in Mississippi. And as of right now, we have about 75. Wow. So, you know, we're down by 90% from what we had. And how far down we go, that's anyone's guess at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, I know there's a variety of reasons for that. One of them being the long, long hours. Like this one guy you talked with, Jeremy Graham, gets up at 1:45 a.m.
Every day.
No, thank you. I'm just usually settling into my deep sleep by that point.
Well, you have to milk cows twice a day, regardless, every day.
Right.
And every dairy farmer gets up early and stays up late. It just happens. He has to get up at 1:45. Others get up depending on when they milk the cows.
Yeah.
It's almost a thankless task. You know, the hard hours, long hours are part of it. And then a lot of the average age of dairy farmers nationwide is around 55 or so. And
yeah.
Jeremy and then the Taylors over in Prentice County, they're in their, you know, late 30s, early 40s. So, you know, they're the part of the younger demographic, but, you know, their kids who are, you know, 7, 8, will they be wanting to be in the dairy business when they grow up? I don't know.
Wow, yeah. I mean, just the long hours have just got to be – you don't even get to take, like, a day off, do you, unless you find somebody to fill in for you.
Yeah, I asked them that. I said, do y'all ever take a vacation? Every now and then, I mean, they'll have a couple of helpers that will help out. But part of the problem, too, is finding and keeping help. I mean, because they're having to do that for 24 hours. For instance, the Taylors – one of them, you know, they're both very active, so one might be at a conference for a couple, 3 days, one stays at home. So they say they very rarely go out together for, you know, they'll go out to dinner or something, but as far as a vacation, not so much.
Well, yeah, I remember back when I was in college, I had a guy I was in school with that came from a dairy farm, and after his freshman year, when it came time for summer, he's like, I want to take summer school because I don't want to go back and have to milk cows at 3 in the morning every day. Like, he was kind of done with that.
You can't blame him for that.
No.
We don't have any cows. We have a cows. Bull.
What cows?
what are some of the other reasons, Dennis, that maybe just we've seen it drop? It? Katrina have something to do with it, too?
Yeah, Katrina, which hit in 2005, entering that year, there are 234 dairies. And then that following year, they lost about 40. And then within 3 years, it was, you know, 100 fewer dairies. A lot of it was, you know, well, this is our opportunity to get out. And they got out because, again, a lot of our older farmers, and there was some damage. And then as you have fewer dairies around, you know, all the infrastructure that's in place, the suppliers, the equipment, all that sort of goes away too, because if there's not that big of a demand, then, you know, it's not cost effective for you to have all that set up.
Yeah.
So some of the farmers that, you know, I talk to, you know, they'll have to order their stuff from way far away from other companies. Sometimes they'll have to search 3 or 4 other companies out of state, because, quite simply, you know, it's not in stock, or, you know, it's not something that they keep because, again, so few dairies.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they were doing business in California or New York or Wisconsin, which are the three largest milk producing states, wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in the 1947, I was reading a Lee County Dairy Association newsletter, and this was around, you know, when things started to really grow. The state had more than 600,000, or nearly 600,000 dairy cattle. 600,000. Wow. Today, there are fewer than 10,000 dairy cows.
Jeez.
I mean, that's how big it was, and that's
Dennis is eating most of them.
you know, burgers are pretty good. So.
Most of Dennis's Facebook posts consist of either pictures of his dog or of him cooking meat.
I'm glad he has not confused the two.
That was a big fat softball right over the middle.
Yeah,
right
I wasn't going to say anything.
Something I want to get back to about George McClain and Harry Martin of the CDF going to get that Jersey Bull years ago. A very important person that wasn't mentioned in the article was Gale Carr. He was the expert that lent his expertise to it all, and he was the founder of one of the first pasteurized dairies in Tupelo, the Carr Myers Dairy. Back in 1945, so a lot of props to him. He's gotten left out in some of the histories that we've had about the significance of dairy and his role play. So don't want to forget Mr. Carr.
Right, certainly. Now, at its peak, Mississippi was producing about 167 million gallons of milk per year. Now it's down to 19 million. But for the people you talk to, this doesn't mean they don't have a possibly good future ahead, right?
Well, some of them, Jeremy Graham, for example, and this is the business he grew up in, the industry he grew up in, is something he wants to stay with. And the Taylors are also, they're passionate about their work, but, Bradley will be honest and tell, I don't know if I'm going to stick with this until I'm 70 years old.
Yeah.
Too many variables involved. And they're only a handful of dairies left in Northeast Mississippi.
Yeah.
And, the biggest thing is finding, whether you're part of a co-op or your independent processor, to find somebody that's going to pick up your milk. I mean, that goes back to the infrastructure that's no longer there.
Sure.
Milk, I guess, is more difficult because you've got to get rid of it quickly.
Yeah, by law, they have to have it picked up. You can't keep it more than 3 days. I mean, it's refrigerated,
right.
But it has to be picked up within 3 days. And, when you're milking, 150, 200 cows, that doesn't take too long to have the milk ready for pickup.
Yeah.
Dennis, the decline in Mississippi you've talked about, is there a similar pattern nationally in that could we get in a point of getting in danger of not having enough dairy farmers to produce milk in the country?
That's a good question. I think in the Southeast, Mississippi is part of the what is called milk deficit states. All of the Southeast is in that we don't produce enough milk to have liquid milk to make the cheese, to make butter, etc. So, we have to, quote, import milk from other states to help meet our needs. There's demand for milk, too. I don't know off the top of my head what the demand is for milk. It's there. I'm assuming, we know what they say about assuming, but I think we have enough, within the states to still make enough milk. Because I don't think that's something you can really transport from, say, China. I mean, Canada, sure, if it gets within 3 days or whatever. But I guess for now, I think we're okay. But again, for the Southeast, Mississippi, we're going to be, we'll continue to have to, get milk from elsewhere to blend with our own milk.
And I know it's tough, too. The climate we're in makes it tough. When it gets hot, cows get hot easily, apparently.
Yeah, 68 degrees is when they start stressing. So, it doesn't take long to get to 68 degrees.
No,
and from, late spring to sometimes late fall, we're not going to see 68 degrees.
Yeah.
So we produce, the cows in Mississippi produce about a third of the amount of milk, say, that a happy cow in California or Wisconsin produces, simply because of the heat stress.
Sure.
And there are also more dairies. If you say why are there only a handful of dairies in Northeast Mississippi compared to so many more down south, is because down south they can grow ryegrass, all year long and, have feed readily available.
Yeah.
There's a little, you would think, it's a little bit cooler in Northeast Mississippi. Well, not cool enough. We still can't grow enough, grass for the cows to feed on.
Okay. Well, a good in-depth story you had there in Sunday's Journal. You can find it at djournal.com as well. As always, Dennis, thank you for joining us.
And go drink some milk.
Yeah. Be sure to check out the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps. New episodes coming to you every Wednesday. Find it in iTunes or podcast apps or at preprally.djournal.com. Be sure to check out today's episode. We talk a little bit of football, looking ahead to the coming season, and a little bit of basketball talk as well. Also, we've got double coverage for you Ole Miss and Mississippi State sports fans. Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry release new episodes every Thursday afternoon, in which they provide game previews, inside commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and the Rebels. You can find that in iTunes or podcast apps or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. I think they're off again this week. Should be back next week.
Sounds right.
Because we got SEC Media Days coming up the week after that, I think. I don't know. I don't have to keep
Stay
up.
Tuned.
I don't have to keep up with that stuff anymore, but I think they'll be back next week.
You can also get up every day and get ready for the Daily Journal's news break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video. Shows are posted each weekday at 7 a.m. at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, and the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices.
And now we have education reporter Emma Kent here with us. Emma, you making it?
She Good looks morning. So happy to be here.
She's struggling today.
You make it sound like I'm hungover, but I'm not.
No. Just a little bit under the weather, perhaps.
That was yesterday.
No, I worked yesterday.
I want to talk with them about the story you had the other day. I guess it was Friday. So the Starkville-Oktibbeha School District, they're doing the STEM initiative starting this year, which people probably are familiar with. It stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. But they're putting a twist on it, Emma.
Yes.
And they've called it STREAMS because mm-hmm. they're adding stuff to it, aren't they?
They are.
What are they adding to it, Emma?
They're adding, so STREAMS, let's see, the R is for reading, mm-hmm. the A is for arts, mm-hmm. and then the last S is for sustainability.
Very good.
So, yeah, so they're adding everything else to it, basically.
So what exactly will how this affect day-to-day teaching in the classroom?
You'll just see more, the best way I can think to describe it is, you know, you think of school, I have math class, I have English class, I have science class, I have history class. It's all separate, right?
Right.
But I think you're seeing more, those things crossing over to where you're doing everything kind of together.
More integrated.
Yeah, right. Like a cross-curricular type thing. Okay. And so that's going to be what this is, but with a real emphasis on putting STEM in the foreground, you know, focusing on that, but then bringing all the other subjects in with it and kind of making it a really just multifaceted sort of curriculum.
And they're also partnering with Mississippi State University on this, correct?
Yeah. And that's a great resource for them, obviously, because they're in Starkville. And Mississippi State, you know, has a lot of good engineering and science programs. So, yeah, they're partnering with them and they'll get to kind of use those resources. And those kids will get to do some things that a lot of kids won't get to do,
yeah.
you know, because they don't have that proximity. But so a cool partnership. And it'll go along with, I think we've talked about this on here before, the partnership school mm-hmm. that they're building in Starkville,
yeah.
where you'll have some middle school kids from the Starkville School District coming in. And then some education students from the university and
right.
kind of working together and sharing resources. So this kind of goes right along with that.
The superintendent for Starkville-Oktibbeha is Eddie Pezant. He used to be at Tupelo, didn't he? Eddie Pezant.
Yes. He's about to start his, well, I guess he's now officially transitioned. He's officially superintendent in Starkville now, and he was assistant superintendent in Tupelo.
Apologies to Eddie for mispronouncing your name. But what is Mr. Pezant hoping his students get out of this long term?
I think just a richer educational experience. I mean, in the real world, all of those subjects kind of cross over more than in school when they're separated. And so, and then also just getting kids interested in STEM fields. I know we've probably talked a lot about that on here, just that there are a lot of science and technology and engineering jobs out there. And, we just need more kids to take an interest in those subjects. So I think just hoping to get kids interested and give them those skills so that when they get older and decide what they're going to do, that they'll maybe choose some of those fields and
sure.
be prepared for those careers. So
Yeah. Well, yeah. Looks like a good program there. And, of course, I mean, Starkville, like Tibahaw, they just consolidated not mm-hmm. too long ago.
A couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so hopefully this will, I know they've had their struggles there when they were before they did that. So hopefully this will kind of be something that helps the whole district.
Yeah, they seem to be doing some really innovative things with the partnership school and with this initiative. So, yeah, it'll be cool to see how it all goes together and works out. So,
again, this was in Friday's Journal, or find it at djournal.com. Emma, thank you as always. Get to feeling better.
Thanks. I'm going to go eat a few more donuts.
There you go.
That'll help, right?
That's the best thing for you.
Yeah.
Watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. 2017 legislative session is over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about all the news coming out of the state capitol.
Scott Morris joining us on this Wednesday. Scott, you had a story in Sunday's paper about... pronounce his name for me, Havis Hurley from Corinth, who's doing a really cool thing. Tell us about his bus.
Yeah, well, so years ago, when he got out of school, he was in Fort Lauderdale working for the Boys Club down there. And so he took a group, he would travel with those guys around Florida. And he took that, the day that that Disney World opened, he was there with a group of kids. And so he moved back to Corinth, and he was working at the Sportsplex for a while. And when he retired, he started driving a special needs bus. And he noticed that a lot of the kids on his bus weren't going on field trips the way the other kids were.
Right.
So he organized a trip to the zoo. On the way back, a 12-year-old kid said that was the best time he had ever had in his life. And I think that just... Mr. Hurley is just somebody who's just dedicated to kids all his life, and so he started working on scheduling these trips down to Disney. He gets Disney works with him a little bit. He gets a little bit of a discounted ticket,
sure,
for everyone. And what the program is, Havis's Kids. That's not the official name, but that's kind of what the group the 501c3 nonprofit is known as. They get a little cut in the price, and Havis's Kids pays for one adult and one special needs kid to go. And then other family members can pay, and I think they also might get a part of that special price to go with them. And it's just become more and more people. I think it started out with something like 45. They had like nearly 200 wow. the last time they went in 2016. They go every other year because there's some fundraising involved.
Yeah.
But I met some of the kids. A guy named Charlie Ayers, he was hit by a car in front of his house when he was 9 years old. Mm. And so now he's wheelchair bound, and he has some mental disabilities to go with that. And I'll tell you what, just hearing him talking about these Disney trips just gets them excited. And it's something they clearly enjoy. I interviewed a couple of kids who have autism, and they weren't really good at communicating to me about things. But like the one kid, he was... he got to meet Buzz Lightyear, Woody, and Jesse, and have a meeting with them. Apparently, his mother said he was just mesmerized, because being able to see the people he watched in real life, and so some really nice memories and experiences for these kids that they wouldn't necessarily otherwise be able to do.
And he's got two buses called Mally's Bus.
Yeah, Mally's Bus. Yeah, Mally Norwood passed away and left some people in charge of her estate, and they approached Havis and gave him $125,000 to buy these buses, these 28-seat buses that have it saves him $8,000 to $16,000 every time they go. But he also drives them around other places. But so they have these buses that they bought can't take all of them. A lot of people are responsible for driving themselves down and flying themselves down, depending. But the buses are available.
And as you said, the offset of years is due to fundraising to be able to do this. What are some of the right ways that they go about fundraising for these?
Well, they got a golf tournament coming up on August 11th at Big Oaks. That was rescheduled from June because of weather, and so it's a golf scramble for anyone who's interested. That number is 871-8994. Again, that's 871-8994. Also, Hurley has a bunch of tickets, a bunch of raffle tickets for a 5-day, 6-night trip to Disney World for a family of four. Those are going for $25 for one and $100 for five. And you can call Hurley at 643-3561. Again, 643-3561 to get one of those. And you don't have to be there to win when they do the drawing, but you will have to have a ticket presented to him. And so those are that includes lodging and includes tickets, 5-day passes to the parks.
Wow, sounds like a worthy cause. For everybody.
And a good chance. You know, if you're the winner, that's a fantastic bargain. But then that's what raffles are supposed to be, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, and Havis is how old would you say?
Well, I have that in the store. Let me just get to that page.
I'm sorry. I may have missed that. 75.
Yeah, 75 years old.
At the age of 75,
yeah.
I mean, just to be able to take these long trips, it must really mean something to him.
Something that didn't make it into the story is he's been there like 55 times, something like that. It's more than 50 times, 30 times before he even left the Florida. And so he's gone in organized groups, and it's something he's done. So he's, but until he started taking parents with him too for Havis's kids, he had never really been able to explore the Main Street shops because he was always having to chaperone the kids.
Yeah.
And so it was like he finally had like a bunch of chaperones, and he just like, man, I just wandered in and out of the shops on Main Street.
He got to do Disney on his own.
He got to do something he hadn't been able to do since the park opened in 1971.
That's pretty cool.
And so thought that was kind of fun.
Great story, Scott. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Would-be host Lauren Wood coming in, trying to upset the throne today.
Mm-hmm.
How are you, Ms. Wood?
I'm doing well. How are you?
It's good. How's it feel to be over there and not over here?
It's okay.
Since you're trying to...
I'll live.
Trying to take one of our positions.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly mine. I've forgiven, but I haven't forgotten.
Hmm.
Oh. What is with this disdain? Hey, the Daily Journal's Reader's Choice Awards were last week at the Tupelo Furniture Market, an annual event. For somebody who has not been before, kind of describe what the evening holds.
It's always really fun. I've been, obviously, every year since I've been working here, and it's a huge community-wide event. Like, it's, kind of showcasing a lot of businesses, and then they've added, I think it was last year, the first year, they did like the really big community helper award, and I think that's really great that they've started doing that to showcase someone who really does a lot in the community and kind of impacts their community. So this year, I was at the furniture market, and it was really well attended, and there was a lot of people there, and a lot of shakeups, new winners. They did a different style of voting this year.
Mm-hmm.
So they did two rounds of voting this time. So they used to just do one. This time they did two. So they had the first round you could vote for literally anybody. And then they took the top three.
I voted for Chris Kiefer a lot.
A lot, yeah. You could write in.
Yeah. You didn't make it.
So. Dang.
Yeah. Skewed the vote.
Imagine how bad it would have been if you hadn't voted for me.
And then they narrowed it to the top three. And then they had one round of voting. And then from those top three, the finalists, they selected a winner. And that's who they announced at the event was the winner for each category. So, yeah.
All right. And you were on hand. You and I were both there. These two yokels weren't there.
Mm, no.
You and I were both there. You were taking pictures of the winners as they came off with their certificate.
Yep. That was the In Focus this week. Yep.
This Monday's In Focus. Good segue there.
Yep.
A nice array of people. A nice array of winners there.
Yes.
Yeah. Chris wasn't in it.
No.
Okay. There were a lot of categories.
There was 115 categories.
That's a lot.
Well, five categories.
Five, and then 115 subcategories.
Yes.
Yeah. I still didn't win.
Still.
No.
115 categories.
I put you down for every single one of them.
Awful.
Obstetrician. I mean, I listed you for all of them and just nothing. This is one of two large events going on with the Daily Journal right now. This one has passed, but the Influential Women that Mud and Magnolias is doing is coming up next week. Is that correct?
Next Tuesday, yeah.
That will be at the J.J. Rogers building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the new venue. If you want to come check it out and see it, it's really, really nice. And it's a luncheon Tuesday. It starts at 11, the doors open at 11. But it's going to be, like, a lot of women were nominated. 20 women were chosen as finalists. And then there was one woman of the year that will be recognized at the event.
Oh,
so yeah, it's going to be really great. It's going to be kind of cool networking event. Lots of people are going to be there. And then we're going to be featuring, obviously, highlighting amazing women doing awesome things in their community, influential women. So.
Good day.
So we'll see you men there. Men come and support women.
Brad, what? All right, Lauren, we appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's it for another fine episode of The Memo.
That's what they tell me.
We got to get out of here, I guess. Podgator says it's time to go. There we go. Nope.
Yep, that's it. That's our cue. Buzzer.
Yep. We're out of time. Had a packed show, though. Good stuff, as always. We'll be back on Friday. So be sure to check us out. If you want to get notified when new episodes drop, you should subscribe to The Memo in iTunes or any of your podcast apps if you don't have an iPhone. Or you can just also stream it online at memo.djournal.com. You can also find out about new episodes by following us on Twitter.
Yep.
At DJournalMemo.
And all the stories we talked about are in your daily journal, or you can follow us on Twitter to find links to them at DJournalNow through DJournal.com.
There you go.
Yep.
That's it. We'll be back on Friday talking food and entertainment.
Don't threaten me with a good time, Brad Lott.
All right.
All right.
See ya.